Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us on the program. It's been a bit of time, but we're so glad he's joining us, and that's Gerard Jerry Kasar. He's the chairman of the Conservative Party in New York State. You can find out more at cpnys.org. Jerry, welcome back to the Capital Connection.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be on the Capital Connection, and I will enjoy going over some issues with you.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. There's a major story that's broken now in New York, and I wonder how wide this actually goes, if it even goes beyond New York. What we're talking about, and I want your reaction to the news, that federal prosecutors say a former aide to two New York governors has been charged with acting as an undisclosed agent of the Chinese government. This woman's name is Linda Sun. She was arrested Tuesday morning this week, along with her husband, at their multi-million-dollar Long Island home. Prosecutors say Sun blocked representatives of the Taiwanese government from having access to high-level officials in New York State and shaped New York governmental messaging to align with China's priorities, this from the New York Times, among other infractions. Sun held various posts in New York government, including deputy chief of staff for Governor Kathy Hochul and deputy diversity officer for former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Governor Kathy Hochul speaking on WNYC, basically saying, when we learned of the misconduct, we fired her. But she was in government for a while, including Grace Meng, who's now in Congress. So my first thought is, this is going on under our noses. And if it's going on here, where else is it going on? What's your reaction to all this?
Well, my reaction first would be, let's really say what she was. She was a spy for the communist government. She had made herself available for a price. She was either providing information or providing a purpose, such as blocking the Taiwanese government from having access to U.S. officials, which are New York officials, which is problematic since the Taiwanese not only are an ally of the United States, they also have enormous business interests in the country. They are not our enemy. Communist China is our enemy, and they were representing Communist China. I would suggest to you it's the tip of an iceberg, but we already knew the iceberg was floating at us. We've known this for years. We actually knew it was in the air when the balloon came over the United States and was taking photos of military establishments. We knew there was a problem when large tracts of land near U.S. military bases was being purchased. So what would she be? She'd be another operative, and her husband would be another operative for the communist government that worked its way into higher levels of New York State government, to the highest levels. Do I think there are other players out there? Absolutely. And I want to just mention this because I do live in Brooklyn, and I'm in the city, obviously. The communist government essentially established what the FBI called police stations in this region, which were really outposts for Chinese security services to monitor expatriates from mainland China that live in the New York area, to monitor Taiwanese individuals in the New York area, and to protect the interests of the Chinese communist government. Wouldn't it be nice if you were in one of those scenarios operating here in the New York region to know that the deputy chief of staff to the governor of the state of New York was on the same payroll as you?
Well, it is quite striking. I mean, as you point out, there have been plenty of examples in this country, and not only more recent examples, but the history of the relationship with China, a communist country, of course. Yeah. Now they have a, quote, president for life in Xi Jinping. We see how they treat the Uyghurs in the country, and we know that they have a sizable population competing for a lot of the same goods and services that we are. And while we have trade relations, this is just another sign that all is not well necessarily in terms perhaps of the motivations of China themselves.
Well, I think their motivation is clearly to look at the entire world as enemies in the event that anyone else in the world would try to challenge their authoritarian government, and they clearly believe that most anyone who isn't with them is against them. So keeping a heavy handle on former citizens of communist China or Taiwanese or people from Hong Kong that, you know, grew up under freedom but then saw their freedom erode as the agreements with communist China began to, evaporate, it's a problem. It's a problem whether you're living in San Francisco or whether you're living in Dallas or whether you're living in Brooklyn. It's a problem when you have a large government like that that's so authoritarian, using its resources to operate within the boundaries of the United States, you know, without any real restraint for a period of time. I got to give credit to the FBI here. I mean, as you know, the arrests were yesterday, but they were at those houses. They were taking information. Obviously, the state of New York began to understand what was occurring here about a year ago. The governor acts as though she discovered all this and reported it. I think it's pretty clear that all she did was stumble over other federal agencies, letting them know that they had a real problem within the state government. I mean, I think her last post was a senior role in the Labor Department. And even this is very confusing. It seems like she was in agencies and working for the governor, and then she was over at EDC. It seems like there's all sorts of overlaps. She worked towards increasing authority, and really, she seemed to have a free hand. There's a lot of pictures that are appearing now that show just how significant her role was within the Asian American community to present a proclamation from the governor is considered a major, major item. And she was moving these proclamations around.
Yeah, a major item, Jerry, a major item in China for Chinese officials.
Correct.
But she could get away with it probably because it wasn't as big a deal. She could get these certificates and pass them around.
You know what? You are 100% right. 100% right. In many of these communities, this would be like a gold medal at the Olympics.
Right.
And the fact that the governor's staff was so unfamiliar with the nature of this large and growing and, frankly, well-educated, their children are extraordinarily well-educated, and a very productive community for New York State, to have mainland China causing these individuals to think twice about what is the freedom of the United States, because all they had to do was, you know, go to their business and find that there was an operative from the Chinese security forces, you know, in contact with their own businesses. This was a real problem in the New York area. And maybe now the pushback is substantial enough that it'll start to clean itself up.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, I think you're right about the FBI. They're, you know, obviously working on a much larger investigation than even just New York. They're tracking this across the country. So, you know, there's the other side of this, which is, don't we spy on other countries like China?
Let me say this to you. I very much doubt that our spying is even remotely similar to this practical invasion of Chinese security officials in the United States monitoring populations. It just doesn't strike me as having an equivalency. And I mean, I think the very nature of American government causes us not to operate like the communist Chinese government operates on foreign territory. So that is an extraordinarily fair question, but I always come down on the side believing that the U.S. generally is a better international player than communist China, by quite a bit, I might say.
Yeah, I wonder, too, about the alliances we see. For example, Vladimir Putin of Russia and Xi Jinping in China. And we know, obviously, that Putin invaded Ukraine and we're worried about China invading Taiwan. I mean, they clearly want Taiwan, as they would say, they want it back. And the issue is, has the invasion of Ukraine opened up the door, potentially, for China to do the same in Taiwan?
I think the various American commentators, academics that speak about these issues do believe that the general atmosphere around the world has the United States in a weakened position. Our interactions in the Middle East, our interactions in Ukraine, our interactions between China and Taiwan can be confusing and could lead one to believe that the U.S. does not currently have a clear policy. Without a clear policy, maybe it's like that baseball game and the guy on third base is going to try to steal home because no one's looking. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, maybe that's going to happen between Taiwan and China. But it's certainly a higher likelihood of happening now than, frankly, I believe in my lifetime.
We're speaking with Jerry Kasar, chairman of the Conservative Party of New York State. Let's turn to more domestic matters, although they're very important, and that's in this current presidential race climate, obviously. You were at the GOP convention, it seems like a lifetime ago now, but fresh off of that, we began to see the Democrats unveil their candidates, and of course, you were at the GOP convention before Joe Biden stepped down and then came Kamala Harris. Seems like former President Trump was riding pretty high in the polls. There's been a bump for the other party, the Democrats now, it seems like. You know, your impressions of the convention and how we're doing at the moment. Obviously, you are firmly behind former President Donald Trump.
That's correct. We have endorsed President Trump. Actually, Jim Jordan came into New York to accept the endorsement on behalf of President Trump. I have an opportunity on occasion to speak with him or to text with him directly. I find the president, to the degree I have interaction, to be very direct, forthright, and policy-oriented, at least, you know, in those limited interactions I've had with him. Let me just say this. The convention was exciting. It was just after, frankly, the assassination attempt, so it had a right. whole different, like, aura to it in that sense. But it was exciting. The GOP spent an enormous amount of time bringing out all their candidates for all sorts of offices around the country. They talked about, they were putting up on screens different policy messaging. They were certainly, you know, making the push for President Trump. We didn't at that point know who the vice presidential pick was going to be. But when that came out, they were ready to, you know, move that front and center. What I found the convention to be was basically, you know, an A to Z formatting of the National Republican Party's agenda using their platform, which is kind of interesting. It's a short platform, but it was clear that it was a platform that the convention and the president were completely behind. So it wasn't rhetoric. It is what they plan to do. And it's very much consistent with the Conservative Party's view of strong law enforcement, strong national defense, lower taxes, less, you know, less government spending and personal responsibility. So we found the Conservative Party finds the national GOP to be, frankly, quite conservative. And President Trump fits in as the perfect leader from that convention. So we got a bump, and they got a bump. But the thing about these bumps is, what do we have right now? We have what essentially is a dead heat national election swinging around the swing states, of which if you look at 9 polls, 4 will have it one way and 5 will have it the other way 1 week, and the next week it'll be 5 one way and 4 the other
right.
way. It is basically a dead heat based on swing states, with popular vote being, you know, not the way the U.S. actually operates,
right.
It's free. You know, frankly, you know, you could, you know, run up a super large number in, say, California. But, you know, our Republic is based on the sovereignty of the states, and the sovereignty in the states translates itself into the Electoral College. And this is the way we've successfully operated for hundreds of years now. So I see us post Labor Day in a dead heat race, with both candidates needing to go out and get their positions out on issues. I don't frankly agree with the debate being on the night of September 10th. I'm a New York City guy. As far as I'm concerned, the night of the 10th and the day of the 11th, you do not do debates. But that was ABC. The debate's going to be important. Because we're going to have an opportunity to have two actual candidates talking about issues. Sadly, President Biden is not up to the job today, and he was not up to the job during that debate. It is clear that he is not capable right now of, I guess forever at this point, of running the country. So let us see what two real candidates have to say on the issues so America can make its decisions. We have not heard a lot from, as you know, from Harris. I saw the CNN interview the other night, and you know, as we all know, it was cut. It was a longer interview. It was cut down, and I did not. This is what I would say: the Democratic Party and the Harris campaign made a major effort to lower expectations, and she met those low expectations. And that's where I think we are right now. She's got a lot to making up to do. There is nobody that would suggest that President Trump doesn't say what's on his mind.
I will agree with you 100% on that, Jerry Kazar, chair of the Conservative Party in New York. I'll throw one more question at you, and it's because we talked about China, and I mentioned Russia and Putin. You've got Orban and Turkey. You've got these dictators around the world. We see a number of articles showing the rise of them, in fact. Now, President Trump has made comments, not only when he was in office, but even said he, you know, we'll take it as hyperbole, I guess, I'll be a dictator on day one. But he seems to gravitate toward these types of people. Does that worry you on any level as we talk about China and spying and, you know?
No, not really, because I've had an opportunity to spend some time with him. I was fortunate to spend the day in court with him. I mean, I've had that at least. I watched the 4 years. I mean, he's a New Yorker. I mean, to be quite frank about it, going back years and years, he was attending Conservative Party functions just socially because he had a relationship with the party, not with me, talking about like Mike Long or the former state chairman, sure, people like that. So, I mean, I think we know him pretty well here. I think it is hyperbole. I think Donald Trump takes pride in America. He believes in the office and will do the best job he's capable of working with the Congress and our democratic system of government. That's my belief.
We are speaking with Gerard Jerry Kasar, chairman of the Conservative Party in New York. I'm David Gustina, and you're listening to The Capital Connection. Let's turn to some more directly state-related issues here, Jerry. And one of the big issues that I know made strange bedfellows among some of the politicians in New York, Democrats and Republicans, was the suspension of the congestion pricing plan by Governor Hochul. Would charge $15 a toll in lower Manhattan for people going in. But you had a number of Democratic lawmakers, from people like Senator Skoufis and others from close to the city, where they didn't even have, for example, a train from Orange County directly down to the city. And even the Democrats saw that as a tax on their constituents. The governor now says there's going to be a new plan coming. Your thoughts on the congestion pricing plan?
Well, we strongly oppose congestion pricing, the Conservative Party, and I do think it came down to more or less Manhattan versus the outer boroughs and the suburbs, with the exception that in particularly the Brooklyn area that's downtown, extraordinarily liberal politicians that for philosophical reasons were advocating this tax. We are against it because that's exactly what it is, a tax that will drive more businesses out of the city and, frankly, does not get you where you need to be concerning mass transit. Let me just say this to you. If there was a pipe broken in your house, would you replace all the other pipes or first fix the broken pipe? The MTA is broken down through the failure to collect $350 million a year in fares on buses and another couple of hundred million dollars a year in fares on subways. These are fare beaters. These are fare cheaters. What they are talking about is bonding out using the congestion pricing money, billions upon billions of dollars. If they were to collect these fares, they would be able to both pay as you go and additionally bond out a capital program. Do I think there is issues on the rolling stock? Do I think it's important that they fix the traffic system, you know, the light system that they use on the tracks, which is ancient? I think those things are all important. I take the subways, and I think that is extraordinarily important. But don't tell me that everybody in Brooklyn needs to spend extra money to get into Manhattan when it's already one of the most expensive cities in the world. Don't tell me that northern New Jersey, where many New York employees live, needs to become so toxic to these business people so that they can now, in this current age, work at home or just move their offices to New Jersey. Mike Lawler, in his congressional seat, which is Rockland County and, you know, Putnam and northern Westchester, this is nothing more than a way to hurt his constituents. And having said all this, you have very legitimate arguments from minority communities in the city that this is a net polluting proposal. There is so much wrong with this. They have not gotten a true federal sign-off from federal environmental protection. What they got here was the President of the United States, Biden, indicating that we will put that stuff in abeyance because we want to move forward. This is a left-wing activist activity that will effectively, not intentionally, but effectively hurt businesses in New York City, and at the same time is so anti-car and anti-driver that anyone who drives a car has a right to complain and feel that government is completely focused against them and is ignoring them. She put in abeyance. You know, she did her little two-step there at the last minute, basically because she knew it was an election issue, and that's what she's about. She's about politics, Governor Hochul. She knew it was an election issue. Now she's coming back with this, well, we'll come back with some alternative plan. Let me say this. If a person really wants to make sure, if this is what they're about, and they really want to make sure that congestion pricing does not go forward, they need to elect President Trump. That's my little push there, a little extra push there, because he's made it clear that he will not sign off on congestion pricing, and the federal government will take back the role it was supposed to have in the first place.
Now let's move on to another issue, and we'll go a little more rapid fire now because we're running out of time, Jerry Kassar. That's okay.
You got me on a real issue there.
You know, that's good. That's good. We want to hear from all sides in our political debate. Now, let's move into an issue that's going to be on the ballot. That's Proposition 1 in November, and you are strongly opposed to that. It's the Equal Rights Amendment. What's bothering you about it?
The way it's written, it's basically anything goes amendment, to which will allow litigation on just about anything you could come up with. It could involve additional government spending on illegal aliens. It could involve potentially moving the question of illegal aliens being able to vote into the state court system, which we believe has been made extraordinarily partisan on the appellate level. It will definitely affect parents on the issue of gender, and it certainly works in the direction of allowing men to play in female sports, boys to play in girls' sports. So those are a few of the highlights. The issue that the Democrats continuously bring up, equal rights using abortion as the symbol, is not real. In New York State, unfortunately from my perspective, but in New York State, abortion is that proverbial, what lawyers say, it's got belts and suspenders in New York State. It's not going anywhere. What they're doing here is they came up with an idea to enhance what they thought was going to be Democratic turnout to assist them in winning elections, and what they forgot to do was to think about all the other things it could do. And as long as we have the resources, which I believe we're going to have, they will find themselves up against a scenario where we will be asking people to come out and vote on this. We will be going out of our way to do what they wanted to see happen, have people come out and vote. But it isn't going to be the people that they wanted to see come out and vote. It's going to be the people who are looking at these issues, they live in these congressional districts, and are going to say, I'm voting no, and why did the Democrats do this?
Yeah, now let's take that to the national level, this issue over abortion, right? Is that a little bit of an albatross for the Republicans in the sense of how the Supreme Court voted down Roe v. Wade? And then the idea that you've seen what seems like a bit of backtracking now from former President Trump on things like IVF. And many women who they poll, especially women, don't like that they don't have the right to an abortion.
Well, I mean, I do think that a lot of us, and including President Trump, wanted to see the issue sent back to the states. I mean, that was always my primary view. I'm pro-life. I'm very pro-life. The party's pro-life. But we wanted to see, our conversation had primarily been about reversing Roe versus Wade. And, you know, President Trump really deserves a lot of credit for the makeup of that court and the reversal. These other issues tend to pop up through the Democratic Party, such as a national abortion ban. We've been talking about sending it back to the states. The national abortion ban is going to be appealing to some and not appealing to others. And like we've been saying, we all need to work together. And if nationally that is unappealing, which I think it really is, let it be a state-by-state discussion, which it has primarily become in this country. I personally believe that abortion as an issue is not for everyone their top priority, particularly if you live in a state where it's been enshrined in so many other ways. And I do think in some places, I'm going to take your view or the general view that it does have an effect and can hurt the GOP in some places. But in those places where it can hurt the GOP, so could illegal immigration hurt the Democrats. You know, so could out-of-control crime hurt. There is no perfect set of issues, and that's why we have elections, right?
Indeed. And, you know, we know, for example, Jerry Kassar, Conservative Party chair in New York, that in presidential elections, you get the highest turnout. But the turnout is still not what it should be. Usually less than 50% of the American people vote in a presidential election. And we're in a free country, a representative democracy. We should have more participation and less throwing your hands up saying, I can't impact the process. Shouldn't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is no excuse for not voting. There's no excuse for complaining and not voting. And let me just say this to you. I actually think the social media world has caused some people to hit a like button and think they voted, you know, on a Facebook page. It's not real. There's only one thing that's real. And it happens every November and maybe in a school board election earlier in the year or village election. It is coming out and voting. Everything else is a feed into that. And let me just suggest this to you, and I say this a lot to people that I directly communicate with. We should be allowed to go to sleep at night believing that we have elected, whether they agree with us or not, the finest set of elected officials so that we know we can sleep soundly. That requires the highest turnout you can get. And to your point, we are not getting that no matter what we do, whether we have mail-in ballots, whether we give people an extra 2 weeks. Just as an aside, but when New York City did not have early voting, where you can vote 2 weeks in advance, you had polls open in New York City from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. They were at every school. They were all over the place. I can't tell you the number of people I knew that walked to work in the morning past the polling place, came home at night and walked past that same polling place, and then the next morning complained about the results and never once voted. And it couldn't have been easier. There is no excuse. Literally no excuse.
And no matter who wins, your endorsed candidate, President Trump, he can't start those games again with a rigged election, can he?
I don't believe the election was stolen. I believe the result was the result. I do think there were anomalies that occurred in different states, and they occur on both sides of the aisle, frankly. So the electoral process is not perfect, and election integrity and security should be a major issue. But the end result here is the question of, I believe we are running this November with a result, and that result is something we're all going to have to live with. And I'm pushing for one result, others are pushing for a different result, but I intend to move forward from whatever result comes out of the election.
Let's hope we just don't wake up to a nightmare. He is Gerald Jerry Kasar, and he is the chair of the Conservative Party in New York State. We do really appreciate you engaging on the issues, and we'll, of course, ask you back in the future.
Well, I would very much appreciate that. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.